This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Wes, I hope you had a wonderful holiday weekend.
Festival? Is that what we're going with?
Whatever. We call it whatever you want. It's quite a weekend. Unbelievable. All kinds of stuff going on.
Pat, good to be with you. We got a lot to go on the show today. In 45 minutes, his team had to sit a month, but Jeff Collins and the Jackets made it count on Saturday night against Duke at Bobby Dodd Stadium. Coach Collins will be with us for what promises to be a fast and intense 15 minutes. Wouldn't you agree if previous Collins visits hold the form?
Coach might be jogging during the interview because the last time I checked, they're still running all over Duke. What was it, 377 yards? So Coach has to be fired up. Can you imagine that guy and that team bottled up for a month and what was ready to unveil itself at Bobby Dodd? And they're still scoring. Crazy. But the coach will join us. And then, of course, Eric McClain will join us an hour from now and get his take with all the stuff that happened over the weekend in the ACC.
All right, let's get to the news of last night. And I do mean last night. Not Saturday night, not Friday night. Let's go to the news of last night. The Atlantic Coast Conference has reset the schedule for this coming Saturday. And it involves previously announced the postponement of the Wake Forest-Miami game. And now the FSU-Duke ball game will also not be played this coming Saturday. And now Miami is going to play Duke. Hey, look, we knew we might get to something like this, and it has arrived. So what the new schedule looks like in the ACC, announced last night by the conference, and I do mean at night, is Western Carolina will play North Carolina at noon. That'll be game one of our ACC Network triple header. Syracuse will be at Notre Dame. That was previously announced at 2:30. Boston College at Virginia, also previously scheduled. That's a 3:30 game. So was Georgia Tech and NC State. That's 4 o'clock here on ACC Network. ABC in primetime Saturday night will be Clemson and Virginia Tech. And then Miami at Duke will be the primetime game presented by GEICO here on Saturday night from Wallace Wade Stadium in Durham. Now, Pack, it brings up the question. Here goes Florida State. 3 straight weeks now, the Noles have essentially elected not to play. COVID issues continue. Contact tracing issues continue. Reportedly, Florida State was only going to have 44 available for Saturday's ball game against Virginia and Tallahassee, and no window available for Saturday's ball game now at Wallace Wade.
We knew this was going to be tough, right? And we knew as this season progressed that there could be issues like the one the ACC is currently facing, and so are other leagues and teams around the country. Wes, the Florida State-Clemson thing we debated, it seemingly ad nauseum. We covered every angle known to man a week ago. And I can only tell you on radio, I've been doing radio for 23 years, I've never talked about a game that never happened more than I did Clemson and Florida State. It was the main storyline in a week that had rivalry week and crazy games in the Big Ten. So that put things in perspective. And then Saturday morning, here we go again. This time it's Florida State with the news that, hey, we got a problem. Now, you know, we've been told, quite frankly, that Mike Norvell tested positive with COVID seemingly 2 months ago. And for the most part, they've been doing all right in the COVID department. My biggest question on Saturday, and we're going to eventually get to your point here. My biggest question on Saturday was, here we go again with another school that's now had to pay six figures to make a road trip for a day tour to Florida State. And I'm not blaming anybody. I told you last week, I thought everybody followed the protocol to a T, but I thought it was inexcusable that a game was not played. Now, here we go again.
Right.
This time, my question with Florida State is this. How in the world did we go from comments that were made last week by both Clemson and Florida State, that got personal and was not a good look for the league. Said it on the air here, said it on the air on radio. A game should have been played. Somehow, some way, an answer should have come up out of all that. Now we fast forward to what happened over the weekend. Wes, how did we get to the point where an institution who starts with 85 scholarships and nothing is said in the media, on this show, on our network, anywhere. And all of a sudden, the announcement Saturday is, hey, we only have 44 guys available to play. When, what happened? I mean, I get contact tracing. I get the test. Believe me, we've been talking about this every day since the middle of March. Now, all of a sudden, we got 44 players. Hey, I get injuries. I get opt-outs. I get positives. I get the tracing. 44 players? You're telling me that happened Friday night? Wait, we didn't know about this on Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday or Friday, much less Virginia having to spend however much money that they had to make a road trip down to Tallahassee. And here we go again. Now we have Florida State's game, and we're going to save you some cash and not have to make the trip to Durham. You're going to just tap out this week. And I hate to say this, but I think it's time Florida State just said, hey, we're done. We're done. I mean, because, and I'm going to tell you why I say this. That's 3 weeks in a row. It's not getting any easier. They are, quite frankly, irrelevant in any race to the championship in any shape, way, or form. And I'm for every player playing and wanting to play. I'm not pointing a finger at anybody. But Florida State's now gone 3 straight weeks. You've had 2 institutions have to pay a ton of cash to make a trip. You're going to be at least given the opportunity not have to spend any money to make a trip. You're telling me you've only got 44 scholarship players. You had another star opt out over the weekend. I don't know what your numbers are. You're not going to play this week. Quite frankly, the only weekend left is December the 12th. I don't think anybody really wants to see Clemson at Florida State. I mean, that's just got ugly written all over it for a lot of reasons. Both sides need to cool off and move down the road. I don't know how you reschedule the Virginia game on the 19th because you got the high school championships at Doak that weekend. So I just wonder if it might not be in the best interest for all parties involved. And I say this with no inside information, that Florida State just goes, hey, you know what? We would love to play our young guys and get more reps. I have no doubt that Mike Norvell and his guys want to play. But Wes, how do they keep moving forward? I mean, we're really almost at the finish line anyhow, and they're not going to play for the third consecutive week. And they've got, they're telling us now we only have 44 dudes on scholarship that can play. And you got a 10-day quarantine, a 14-day quarantine. What are we talking about? I really think Florida State should just say, hey, we're good. You know, we're going to get this thing together. Hopefully we can bounce back and start building back the foundation, which has made Florida State football great in years past. There is so much work to be done for Mike Norvell. And this thing has just kind of come to a screeching, ugly halt at the end. I think Florida State should just move on to 21, in my opinion.
Pack, the interesting thing about all the timelines involved in this, especially as the one that relates to Florida State, is when. Is when does the clock start on positive test? Oh, when does the clock start on contact tracing? Because, and I'm going to use Trevor Lawrence as the example. We found out about Trevor Lawrence on a Thursday night off a test that was administered on Wednesday, correct? And Trevor Lawrence then missed the Boston College game. He missed the Notre Dame game. Clemson then had a bye before Trevor Lawrence came back. So, now at some point, Florida State would have probably been smart to say, hey, by the way, you know, Manny Diaz, there have been some coaches, and I'm not laying this on Mike Norvell. I'm just saying if you pay attention to coaches' cuts that we show, conference cuts here, coaches' commentary, statements from folks during the course of the fall, there are things that get said about where does this kind of lie with your team? Well, we hope to be able to play Saturday. How many times have we heard any coach, but in particular Mike Manny Diaz, has said, hey, we hope we're able to go Saturday, right?
Right.
Nothing last week. Not one thing was said last week by Florida State about the possibility of not being, hey, and that's fine. If that's the way they want to play it, that's fine. But on the heels of the previous Saturday against Clemson, one would have thought that there might have been something a little more forthcoming about, hey, look, guys, we had some issues last week. Yes, it didn't end smoothly as we'd hoped. Doctors this, whatever the case may be. We spent too much time worried about last Saturday from a public consumption standpoint that, by the way, the game ahead, we didn't necessarily pay attention to. Now, that's not Florida State's question. That's a question we should have asked, right? Maybe we should have said with Ira Schofield or somebody else. But nothing, Mark, that I saw, read, heard, indicated that Florida State's game was in the balance.
Well,
right?
In fact, I would go as far to say I heard just the exact opposite. Well, you know, we had Mike Norvell unfortunately tested positive back in September, and you know, we haven't had any positive tests to refer to. I mean, that's why Saturday morning when I saw the number of 44, I mean, I had 10,000 flags went off in my head. Like, wait a minute. That didn't happen like Friday night. Oh, when tests came back, we got 44 guys. I have a hard time believing that. I got to be honest with you. I mean,
right.
That doesn't happen overnight. I cover the whole country on radio, right? There are many times during the week that you will hear, well, Team X is having some COVID issues. Now, they don't give you the exact numbers,
right,
but there is at least an acknowledgement on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, that a game is in balance. That, hey, I'm not sure if Missouri can go this week or Mississippi State or Colorado or USC. And if the game gets canceled Saturday, man, it stinks. It stinks for all of us because we all want to see these games play. And more importantly, the kids and the coaches want to play. Again, that's why I'm not pointing any fingers here. But you can't all of a sudden on Saturday morning go, hey, we're out, man. I hate it. Virginia, appreciate you coming down. But we only got 44 scholarship guys. Where did that come from? Where in the world did that number? I mean, if you would have said, hey, we're not comfortable playing like we had for the Clemson game. Okay, I mean, you do what you got to do. But that number Saturday was like, nah, come on now. Who are we fooling here? I mean, at some point in time, you got to say, we're just not ready to play. And Florida State was not ready to play for Clemson. They were not ready to play Saturday. And the ACC did them a favor, in my opinion, by going, hey, we know you're cash trapped right now. Let's make sure that you don't have to spend any more money trying to get, who knows, 35 guys to get to Durham. But I just wonder if Florida State, with December the 12th now, really the only date that seemingly makes any sense to me, because the 19th, like I said, they've got high school games in their stadium. So, I mean, you've got Virginia could come down there. Clemson could come down there. You got the Duke game. I just think at some point in time you go, hey, we might just be better off saying, hey, we hate it. We wanted to play, but we are physically not in a position to move forward. And for Mike Norvell and company, and like I said, playing a game on the 12th or the 19th is fine and great if you could pull it off. But they've got so much they've got to figure out down there that I just wonder, hey, if it wouldn't be better off for all parties involved that they just kind of move forward into 21.
Yeah. Well, the other news item out of Tallahassee last night became that Asante Samuel has reportedly opted out for the remainder of whatever left in the 2019 season for Florida State. The outstanding corner, safety, defensive back for the Noles, who had 3 interceptions, 6 breakups, and 30 tackles, has said he is done, and he will declare for the 2021 NFL draft and file the paperwork. So his career at Florida State has come to a close. And an outstanding season, had 2 interceptions in the season opener against Georgia Tech, added another one, and really ended up being one of the outstanding defensive backs in the ACC this year. So our best to Asante Samuel as he makes the move to the next level. And again, inventory of players also counts at this point in the season, and that's certainly a factor as well. That's a good player, by the way, and another one who has opted out with the meter running a little bit here at the end of the year. So,
let me tell you something. Florida State's had plenty of them. There's a lot of good players in Tallahassee, and most of them are just not available to play. And like I said, I mean, nobody's happy about this. I mean, everybody wants to see Florida State play. I've said this 100 times on the show. I said it once. Florida State needs to be good. It needs to be good for the league. I mean, this is not a happy time for anybody in the conference watching Florida State just kind of stumble and bumble to the end here. This has been kind of an ugly mess the last couple of weeks. So I just think that Mike Norvell and company need to just say, hey, you know, we're going to excuse ourselves from the table and we're going to go get to work. We're going to go recruit. We're going to get better players. And we're all in. We got a lot of work to do in Tallahassee. And again, everybody's rooting for them to be good because when the Noles are the Noles, the league is better. There's no question.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Notre Dame and Clemson. You wanted to know if they're on a collision course for Charlotte. They gave you no reason this weekend to doubt it. Big wins in what possibly was Trevor Lawrence's final home game as a Tiger. And the Irish flexed on Saturday, or Friday, rather, in the second half at Chapel Hill. Packer and Durham's Monday edition coming back on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Monday, 844-SAY-ACCN. Lots of football, lots of basketball to get into. Some crazy storylines, schedule changes. I mean, you want news, we got news. You want stories, we got that. One thing remained consistent, though, over the weekend, and that is that the league's two best teams looked the part. Friday and Saturday, and it started in Chapel Hill on a Friday afternoon, Wes. Notre Dame really, really looked good.
They did, and boy, the ball game started out like it was going to be arena football, didn't it, Pac?
Yep.
Carolina goes down the field. Notre Dame goes down the field. All of a sudden, we got a shootout. We're four possessions in with three scores, and you're thinking, wait a second. Hang on. I thought that we were talking about a ball game that might, you know, kind of find its way, and eventually it did. And while Carolina played well, Notre Dame played a lot better, especially in the second half. When Ian Book flexed, Kyron Williams flexed, and the Irish defense pack that may have been undervalued in some spots really flexed, I thought.
Well, I don't think they're undervalued. I think they're really, really good. And I tell you the thing that amazed me the most, when Kyle Hamilton gets thrown out for targeting, which, by the way, you know how much I love that call, and it was the correct call. You're thinking at the time, all right, North Carolina, the most versatile defensive player on Notre Dame's team, a guy that can play at all three levels, much like Isaiah Simmons did last year for Clemson. We're going to now take him out of the game. Sam Howell, all you great wide receivers, great backs, big offensive line, it's go time, North Carolina. And guess what happened? In the second, the third, the fourth quarters, North Carolina scored 3 points and had 136 total yards. Notre Dame's defense impressed me more Friday than they have at any point in time this season, because they took the most talented guy off the field against a truly dangerous offensive team. And you know what they did? They swallowed them whole. They said, we're going to attack you. And guess what, Sam Howell? We're going to put somebody in your face, and now we're going to see if you can make a throw. And you know what happened? They didn't. Notre Dame's defense was awesome on Friday. And like I said, I think Kyle Hamilton is one of those dudes you'd pay to watch every week. And when he's gone, you're thinking, okay, North Carolina's gone up down the field twice. Again, I told you that they'd be able to score on them. Didn't know if they could stop them. But what Notre Dame's defense did on Friday was, I thought, maybe the most impressive thing I saw this weekend in college football. Because they went on the road.
The other part.
And just said, no, I don't think so. Yeah, I know you did that to Wake Forest and all those guys, and you can throw for 8,000 yards, but not today you aren't. And, man, that was an impressive performance by Notre Dame's D on Friday.
The other part is the impressive performance, the two things you knew Carolina needed to do, and for a third time the Tar Heels lose in the year, but they also had their run game shut down. That was the number one point about Notre Dame on Friday, Pac. The second thing is this. The pressure they got around Sam Howell also prevented Carolina from dialing up the vertical game.
That's right.
The two things you know Carolina can do, the mid-range game, that 8 to 13 yard we talk about, 8 to 15 yard, whatever, that area, that was the only ventricle they had to operate in at any point, and that was a hard time. But the run game got minimized and the vertical game got shut down. And when you do that to the Tar Heel offense, you're going to create real issues. Now, I thought Jay Bateman tried to do some nice things defensively to keep Carolina in it. But Notre Dame had answers with Kyron Williams pack, and they really had answers with Ian Book. I thought Ian Book, once again, proved to be, outside of Trevor Lawrence, the discussion with Ian Book and Trevor Lawrence is is interesting. And we saw both guys really, really have good ball games this weekend.
And they can beat you two different ways. I mean, Ian Book's so good with his feet that he just extends play. Even when you think you got him, you really don't have him, because he's going to figure out a way to extend a play and get out of trouble. And the other thing is, he doesn't turn the ball over. He's been incredibly smart with the football. And again, Notre Dame's got tremendous experience. They had two guys out in their offensive line. Didn't seem to matter. Next man up, let's go. We're going to pop you in the mouth. But I just thought Notre Dame's defense, especially when the game's 14-14 in the first, and I kid around with you last week, I thought that game's going to be in the 30s again. I thought it would be a high-scoring game. That was kind of a one-for-two, because Notre Dame did get in the 30s. But yeah. I thought North Carolina would be able to score. And after the first couple drives, I'm thinking, well, this is kind of what I thought. I thought North Carolina would be able to move the ball. Eventually, we'll see if somebody can get a stop. But that stat I just gave you, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, North Carolina's high power offense, 3 points, 136 total yards, 7 sacks. That is called getting dominated. And that was, I thought, the most impressive piece of football that I saw this weekend was what Notre Dame's defense did to North Carolina's offense on Friday. Notre Dame is playing really, really good football, and seemingly with more confidence as they go along. And this week, God willing, knock on wood, no COVID issues, they get Syracuse this week in South Bend.
Let's move to Saturday afternoon at Frank Howard Field at Memorial Stadium. Military Appreciation Day, all purple for the Tigers with the orange hats. And guess what Clemson did? Hey, by the way, we're still okay over here. We're good. And the Tigers showed it against a Pittsburgh team that had been playing very, very well. And if it was the final bow for Trevor Lawrence, pretty good, Pac. 403 on 26-37. And Cornell Powell on the back end of a couple of them. He'll be with us tomorrow on the show, by the way.
A couple things here. Number one, an angry Clemson team is fun to watch. It was 31-0 first quarter. And this was a Pittsburgh team coming in relatively feeling good about life and playing with a lot of confidence. And Kenny Pickett, who's been outstanding, had no chance. None. And as I watched that first quarter, Wes, you know what all I kept thinking about was? The best thing that ever happened to Florida State is that these guys didn't show up the week before. That's all I kept thinking about was, oh, my God. It's 31-0. And I'm going to also say one other thing, and this is going to be proven later on. In my opinion, the best collection of catches in one game, even better than the Wake North Carolina game, happened in this game. You're going to see catches in this game when we do wide receiver U that you're going to go, well, that's the winner. And then you're going to see the next one, you're going to go, oh, no, that's the winner. It's absolutely spectacular, incredible athletic catches in this game. Even some that were not even ruled a catch because of a penalty or whatever that we couldn't even add to the list. I've never seen a game with more spectacular catches this year than what I saw with Pitt and Clemson on Saturday.
31 points in the first quarter, most points in a quarter by a team against a Power 5 opponent since 2015, by the way, Pac. And here's the other thing, too. This is from ESPN Stats and Info. Trevor Lawrence is averaging 248 yards passing per game in the first half this year, including his 302 on Saturday, right? That's on pace to be the fourth highest rate of any quarterback in the last 15 years. Okay? Here are the other three. Graham Harrell, he doesn't know what a run play looks like. Patrick Mahomes, he didn't run it much. They didn't have many run plays either when he was at Guns Up Texas Tech, right? And we know what Joe Burrow did last year. How about that stat? That's crazy right there, Pac.
Well, it also tells you that if he plays a full four quarters, all these idiots talking about, well, he's dropped in the Heisman. You got to watch games. You got to do some amount of work if you're a Heisman voter. The guy is not good. He is a great college football player.
Yep.
And here's the other thing about this game, and it became really apparent when you watched it. James Skowski, Tyler Davis, Mike Jones were all back for Clemson on the defense. We're sitting here talking about Trevor Lawrence, which is all fine and good, and the incredible catches, which you're going to see. Clemson is a different animal when those three guys that I just mentioned, Skowski, Davis and Jones are playing, because now all of a sudden the middle, yeah. which became vulnerable in the Notre Dame game, is no longer vulnerable. In fact, not only is it not vulnerable, they're going to attack you. And I thought Clemson, who wanted to come out and make a statement, when it's 31-0 in the first quarter against a pretty talented Pitt team, you just kind of went, okay. Again, after watching Notre Dame Friday, and they were like, okay, here's Clemson, okay. Again, if biggest word in sports is if we get that game in Charlotte for the championship, grab your popcorn, and whatever it costs to get in the game, it will be worth it, because those are two really, really good football teams.
Yep, right about that. Here's what's left for both of them. Tigers, of course, primetime Saturday night against Virginia Tech. And currently, according to the schedule, the 12th is a bye, and the TBD at Florida State. You see what's left for Brian Kelly, who, by the way, passed Lou Holtz on the career wins list at Notre Dame and now only trails Newt Rockne. They have Syracuse and then Wake Forest on the 12th in Winston-Salem before an ACC championship game scheduled for December the 19th. So there's what's left for the two war horses, at least so far, in ACC football. All right, we got more to come. Jeff Collins is on the way in about 15 minutes. When we come back, though, NC State and Boston College. Roddy Jones and your boy had a little drama at the end on Saturday at the Carrier Dome Pack. Bailey Hockman, tale of two halves. Meanwhile, Boston College got five takeaways from the Ville, but they got an injury. We'll talk about that too when we come back.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Monday. Lots to talk about. By the way, I just, before we get to our other games of note, again, Jeff Collins coming up here in 50 minutes.
Yes, sir.
The legendary Timber Ray just sent me a stat that I just want to read real quick, because I just mentioned.
What he said.
This is unbelievable, because I mentioned that the folks, the Heisman idiots, that will go, he's dropped, he hadn't played. I keep saying, you got to do a little homework. Timber Ray sent me a note that says that Trevor Lawrence has played in the fourth quarter in 20 of his 37 games. Let that marinate a second.
That's a great note. Can I write that one down?
I was going to go to our next topic, but I wanted to go back to something I just mentioned with the Heisman idiots. They go, he's dropped. He didn't play. And again, you got to do a little homework when he does play, the numbers that he puts up. If he played a whole fourth quarter game and the intent was to run up the score and pad stats, he probably would have won already on Heisman and looking for another one. So in 37 career games, he has played in the fourth quarter in only 20 of them. Let that marinate a second. That's right. A Timber Ray special. He gets all the credit for that. All right, there you go. So I just want to
nice
make
call,
that
Beret. Appreciate you. Appreciate your contributing efforts to the show, Packer and Durham. Appreciate that, Tim. We'll get you a shirt. Get him a shirt.
If we have one.
By the way, Drew Brooks, the lead singer and driver of the Winnebago today in Bristol, says that is 54%. Drew, is that right? 54% of the games he's appeared in a fourth quarter of his career. Because I can't do the math. That was well stated. It's been well stated and proven this weekend, by the way. When I made an on-air mathematical calculation at the Carrier Dome. It happened. It's okay. Everybody's all right.
It's
nobody
what
got
makes
hurt.
You, my man. That's what it's all about. You
well,
man up
thanks
it.
Very much.
You take full credit, just like me.
Miss Jean's awfully proud. Miss Jean's awfully proud watching this morning to know her son at 54, nearly 55 years old, still can't do math. Okay, here we go. Let's go to Central New York. We do. Thank you. Can we go to Central New York? Roll the video. Here's NC State, winners of two straight, feeling pretty good, coming off the win over Liberty. And you know the thing I respect, it's not been the best fall pack for Dino Babers' team. But I will say this now, that group has not shut it down.
Right.
They play hard and bring it. And I'll say this too, They play good on defense. Play good on defense and make you earn it. Now, is it perfect? No, and nobody is. But Syracuse came out, a little bit of a spark here, and Rex was flinging it.
Wes, it's exactly the reason why I can't put Syracuse 15th in accounting. Because you know what? Yeah, are they very good? No, they're not. They've won one game. But you know what? At least their kids play every week. And at least their kids try every week. And they try to compete. And, I, you know, at the end of the day, you know, does Dino want to win more games? He does. Syracuse fan base frustrated?
Yep.
No question. I get it. You want to win more games. And, you know, they're going to play their 11th game this week. Now, how many teams around the country can raise their hand and say, hey, we played all 11 this year or all 10? Yep. Not many, but Syracuse is. And I give them all the credit in the world because let me tell you something. They had opt-outs. They've had a ton of injuries. It hasn't been smooth. They've had to play in front of no fans. I mean, if there was ever a team that had every reason to go, hey, we're going to tap out, it's Syracuse. But that's not been the case. Yep. They've played hard. And you know what? They pushed NC State to the brink. They played well at Clemson, for crying out loud, where they could have gone down there and said, man, we're going to get beat by 80. That wasn't the case at all. That was a, what, 27-21 game in the third quarter. My point is, hey, would you want to win more games? No doubt. Everybody does. But at least these kids have put it on the line and have gotten after it the best way they can. And you know what? I respect that. Even though they may go 1-10, but I respect the fact that they've gone out there and competed every week, never copped out, never had an excuse, didn't tell you about we don't have any scholarship guys. Hey, they've had dudes, like I said, opt out, injuries, leave town, head to the NFL. They've had all that. Check, check, check. But they still play every week, and good for them. Good for them.
Well, I tell you what, Bailey Hockman was sensational against the Orange, especially in the second half. First half, there were some moments. Second half, Hockman and Coach Doran told us after the game, might have raised his voice at the half in the locker room, kind of gotten his guys square. Hockman responded, career high 313 yards in a 4-touchdown effort. However, Syracuse gets the ball back about a minute to go and a chance, right? Ugh. A chance to get the thing to overtime. And that's the fourth down play. Rex Culpepper took the spike on third down, or took the sack on third down, and then got him back to the line of scrimmage and spiked it on fourth down. And essentially the ball game came to an end on that play right there. You feel for Culpepper, put in that situation, try and make plays, things like that, lose track of the contest. You feel bad for Dino Babers and his team. It's kind of a thorn to the whole thing. But the idea is NC State turned it on the second half. Zonovan Knight looked good. Ricky Person looked good. Thayer Thomas, sensational. And Emeka Emezi hit wide receiver U with the touchdown catch and ended up being the game winner.
Thayer Thomas, 3 touchdown catches. And you'll see it. I mean, I this weekend had unbelievable catches across the league. And you'll get it during the wide receiver U segment. Yep. But again, for NC State, finding ways to win close games. They have done it all year. They did it with Wake Forest. They did it this past Saturday. The Pitt game. I mean, you can go back, and they are on the cusp of an 8-3 season if it all works out. Again, play all 11. I cannot compliment enough programs this year that have played the full allotment of games. Have you been able to navigate through this crazy world, win, lose, whatever? You know, just to be able to compete and play, I tip my hat to you. But for NC State, a critical year for Dave Doran with all the staff changes, coming off a lousy year, and he knew he had to win games. That's exactly what NC State's done this season.
Boston College, by the way, their 5th ACC win, most since first time they've won that many since 2009. Their best effort since joining the league is 6 in 2007. That was with Matt Ryan. But BC beats Louisville 34-27. The final. Cards had some turnover issues. And Dennis Grossell comes in the ball game to replace an injured Phil Jurkovic, who left with 200 yards on 15 of 19 in the third quarter. David Bailey also got shaken up, but you see Lewis with a touchdown catch. Louisville, by the way, 0-5 on the road this season. 6-game road losing streak dating back to last year. Turnover is another issue for the Cards on Saturday in a 7-point Boston College win. BC is at Virginia on Saturday, Pac.
Is it? I know today's the last day in November. We'll do Notepad tomorrow, looking back at the month. But as we roll into December, Wes, is it crazy to believe that if I said ACC Coach of the Year, you'd have to put Dave Doran in that list? You'd have to put Jeff Hafley on that list? Did you put Brian Kelly on that list? Even though the expectations were also really, really high. I mean, are those the three that we're talking about?
Yeah. Yes, I think so. I think the first two in particular, because there were already preconceived expectations at Notre Dame. And, yeah, I know they've gone undefeated, and everybody says, well, you know, that's not fair. His team's actually undefeated. Yeah, I got that. But this guy, we weren't sure they were going to get guys lined up, right? We had no idea. Everything being done on Zoom, the pandemic, the whole nine yards. And then certainly the respect you have for what Dave Doran has done with his team at NC State. I think Hafley and Doran will be at the front of the list. Brian Kelly will certainly get some strong consideration, no doubt. But those are the three guys in my mind that when you look at Coach of the Year, it's kind of that race for sure.
And I think Dave Clawson probably gets some love on that one too, given the fact of what they lost from a quarterback, wide receiver perspective going into the season. Yeah. And once again, the Swiss sitting right there, you know, hey, causing problems for everybody. To me, those are the four that you would probably have a conversation about. I'm just guessing. I don't have a vote. I don't want to vote. I just give you my opinion, and down the road we go. But that would be my guess as we head into December.
Yeah. We'll let you know how it goes back. We'll let you know how those awards.
You know, you've got limitations with math. My limitation is I don't want to vote for anything. I'm asked to vote on everything. I turn everything down. I have no interest in voting in your poll. Right. Zero.
It's not a soft pass either. It's a hard pass. I respect that.
Hard pass. I'd rather not try to influence anyone with a vote.
I know. That's right.
Yeah. That's my take.
Quick reminder to you, we have a fresh new triple header of ACC football for you. Like the way I sold that, pack?
I did.
Western Carolina, North Carolina is noon on Saturday from beautiful Kenan Stadium, 4 o'clock. Presented by Dr. Pepper, Georgia Tech, and NC State. And then in primetime, ACC Network Football presented by GEICO with number 10 Miami visiting the fabled horseshoe on the West Campus at Duke. When we come back, that middle game will feature the guy whose team took a month off and came back and looked fresh and ready to ride. Jeff Collins joins us live from Midtown Atlanta on a Monday edition of Packer and Durham, where we continue right after this on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Monday. What I could do for a turkey sandwich right about now.
Let's go. No, let's go. Come on, let's go. Come on. Let's go.
Let's go 404.
Get it going. Let's go.
Let's go. Here we go. Jeff Collins wound up and ready to go. Took a month off. Man, all of a sudden the Jackets come out there with those sweet unis and still scoring. There's the coach. Coach, first of all, it's good seeing you playing football again, man. Holy Mac, what a crazy year this has been.
Hey, there's no doubt that the 3 weeks of playing kickball and dodgeball and having home run derbies and OTA style practices, trying to navigate this whole thing. It's been nuts, but just really proud of the players, proud of the coaches who kept the guys engaged, kept them bonding, kept them getting better. And you saw the result on Saturday night, downtown Atlanta, Bobby Dodd Stadium, with a big win and scored the most points in an 88-year run against Duke. And just really proud of the guys.
I don't want to go to singular moments, but was there a moment of hesitation of like, hey, okay, here we go after a month and let's kind of see what we are? Or did you think leading up to the ball game you had a pretty good indicator without game competition for 4 weeks?
One of the biggest parts of our process during the game is about 4 hours before kickoff, we actually do a thing we call kinesthetic awareness. We do ladder drills. We do ball drills with tennis ball, reactionary. We do ladders, med ball slams. And it was the best kinesthetic awareness period that we've had in the last 18 months that we've been here. They had Lou Corrales. I don't know if y'all saw the shot in the locker room post game where I had the whole team lift our head strength with Lou Corrales as we sang the fight song. Well, during kinesthetic awareness, 4 hours before the tip, the guys impromptu had Lou up in the air and were bouncing with the music blaring. And I knew at that moment, hey, we got a chance to have a really good night tonight. And we did.
Here's where I want to go. I remember having a conversation with you earlier. And you had just knocked off Florida State. And you joined the show. And we talked about the kicking game. And you said, hey, I'm taking full responsibility for that. We got all these blocks and all that stuff. So I just want to give a shout out to Stewart, who went 8 for 8 on extra points.
Yes.
So and when I saw that happening on Saturday night, I said, if we get Coach on, that is going to be on my list to do a shout out of 8 for 8 on extra points on the Saturday night. So props to your kicker and all the good coaching.
Hey, here's my favorite part is I've never experienced the level of cheer that happens in a stadium after an extra point. Every time we drill an extra point, the Bobby Dodd, even though it's socially limited and not as big a crowd as, we would love, it goes nuts when we hit those extra points, man. So we also had a new holder. Tucker Gleason was out there holding for us because Presley Harvin was down, and I thought he did a really nice job as well.
Way to get everybody accounted for. I like that.
No, I like it. I like
you
it.
You have played. Here's the other thing. You're a defensive guy at heart, okay?
Yep.
I know it. We all know it. Jordan Dominick has gone to another level in this ball game. What transpired for Jordan Dominick in the last month? Roddy Jones and I are trying to make our way back from Central New York, and we're looking at Jordan Dominick knocking a guy down the end zone, causing a fumble, coming up with a touchdown, running out of there with it, and that's just part of the ball game he had.
Right. The biggest thing is you look at his catapult numbers stat line from yesterday. The way he played the game, a ridiculous effort. He set records for distance for a defensive end, contacts for a defensive end, sprints for a defensive end, top speeds for a defensive end. So we're a culture built on effort. When you can show empirical data that says this is how you do it, just play ridiculously hard and good things will happen. And that's what Jordan Dominick did. And I thought he did a really nice job during our break of making sure he consistently gave great effort in practice, and it paid off on Saturday night.
Coach, we made a lot of this last week, but, Duke had not played in 3 weeks. You guys haven't played in a month. Did you even get a sense prior to kickoff that, hey, I've got to almost tone everybody down a little bit? Because you get so energized to play, even when you get into a routine, much less go a full month without playing a game. I could only imagine the locker room prior to that. It had to feel like, man, when those doors open up here, you better gas up that car, get the thing out of the way, man, because we're ready to come out there and play some football. I can only imagine the buildup of energy really in both locker rooms had to be crazy Saturday night.
Yeah, Pac, you've known me for 2 years. Wes, you've known me for almost 25. Toning it down and calming people down is not one of my go-tos in this program. So we let them go. We let them get excited. And, Derek Moore, he does the pregame speech for us, and he also is not one to tone things down. So just proud of the guys and proud of the coaches, the way they approached every single thing that we had to get done to have that big win.
All right, Jeff, I want to speak a little bigger picture here because – obviously enough of a sample size to get a feel, even with the month off, right? The month away from gameplay. You know about commitment. You know about investment now after 2 years. Certainly no team is going to go through this pandemic and not understand at least where those two things are. Because as Mark and I have talked about for the last 6 weeks, what the young people have done to play college football on a major level is unbelievable. Just the commitment, the discipline. Even those teams that have had a moment with the COVID where they've missed a game or had a game push, things like that. But I want to go to one thing here about this interesting rub we've got. After 2 years, it's got to be just like a whole different world now. And at the end of 2020, regardless of wins and losses, you're going to have the full spectrum that sometimes I would think it takes a coach 5 to 7 years to get from kind of where you are as a program.
Yeah, 100%, and that's something we talk about all the time, the investment in the culture that we're building. It's very easy in year one for the guys to really learn it and try to figure it out in real time, and there's ups and downs, and guys are trying to get in, and guys are trying to figure it out. Year two, they know exactly what the expectations of this organization is. They know exactly what we expect. They know exactly what their teammates are supposed to do and how to do it, and you can just see the galvanization. I don't know if that's a word, but I decided to use it this morning. The galvanization of the culture on with certain guys and the elevation. And then some, it's just harder. And you see it. And you coach guys through it, and you try to get them to elevate their game and who they are. Because we want every single player in our organization to be successful in every single phase of their life. And the things that we teach and the things that we preach and the things that we prioritize in this program lead to success in every single phase of your life and as a program. And you see guys really elevating that. And, you know, it's a really good base that we've got. And you add that with the elite job that our assistant coaches are doing recruiting. And it's just going to build and build and build. And just excited for what we've got and what's coming down the road in the future, too.
And that leads to what I think is going to be a really entertaining game this week. You guys are feeling good about life because you're playing and coming off a huge game with 56 on the board. And you see an NC State team that Dave Doran's guys have really done a tremendous job too. And they're feeling good about surviving a road trip to Syracuse. Wes did the game Saturday. That leads to a really, really fun matchup, hopefully, this weekend.
Yeah, I've really been able to watch them a lot in the crossover games and just really applaud how they're playing. They play tough. They play physical. They play with great effort. They're opportunistic. They stay together. All the things that we're preaching in this program as well. And it's going to be fun. 4 p.m. ACC Network on Saturday. It's going to be awesome.
All right. I want to go back here real quick before we're done. I want to make sure I got this right. We had galvanization, which, you know, I like that word. We're going to use that on this show again.
Please.
Empirical effort, right? That was
empirical
what Dominic
data
had.
On data. Effort, yes.
Data.
Yep.
Oh, data on effort. Yep. Okay, I want to make sure I got that. All right, and then what was that awareness we did before the game, 4 hours before the game? Because Packer's going to start doing some of that before we do the show.
I already do.
Yeah, kinesthetic awareness.
What's that called?
Something we do every –
Kinesthetic awareness.
Yeah. Yep. And just, you know, using my Western Carolina University education to its fullest, and I take a lot of pride in that.
Let me tell you something, Coach. That stuff works. That stuff works because I throw a tennis ball to my dog Fuller at 4 a.m. for at least a half an hour, 3 hours before tip-off here on the show. So I'm with you on that. All that stuff, it just kind of gets you going, man. Just kind of gets you dialed in
and that's the,
to the
that's
day.
That's the drill that I run, too.
Right. That works.
Yeah, the tennis ball drill is my drill.
No doubt.
You get the bounce on the first one. They got to catch it off the bounce.
Right.
They got to catch it off the roll. Then they got to catch an alley-oop. And then slam it to finish, and then they rotate to the ladders and the med ball slams.
All works. I can vouch for that. Now, granted, my dog's doing all the work. I'm just sitting there drinking something cold to drink at 4 a.m. walking the dogs.
Same.
But I'm in. That all works.
Jeff, would Pack qualify for whatever the Club 10-10 champ is, by the way? Would Packer qualify for some of that?
Yeah, so Club 10-10 is gaining 10 pounds in the offseason. I'm sure Pack was able to do that during Thanksgiving week. And so proud of him for being able to join Club 10-10.
I galvanized that turkey, Coach, is what I did. That was galvanization of white meat is what that was.
No doubt.
And then some others, including that pumpkin pie and that apple pie. I had a pecan pie, by the way, this morning with whipped cream at 5 a.m. for breakfast. So I got that 10-10 plus. That's what I'm going to come out with. 10-10 plus for you, Collins. That's what I'm going to have for you.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I got on Twitter. They were getting on me because I admitted I didn't know there was a difference between sweet potato pie and pumpkin pie.
Oh, yeah.
But it is what it is.
It's all good. It's what it is.
Hey, anytime. Hey, thanks as always. Appreciate the time.
Absolutely.
Good luck Saturday in Raleigh, okay?
Thanks, guys.
All right. Jeff Collins, That's awesome.
He is wound up. And I thought about them Saturday night, Wes, because you're thinking, here's Duke. They haven't played in 3 weeks. Here's Georgia Tech. They haven't played in a month. It's a perfect night for football. And all these kids have done so much work. They just want to play. All of them. That's true. Whether we're Florida State, Syracuse, or anybody in between. And they're going to finally get a chance to go out there and do their thing. I mean, I can only imagine the energy in that locker rooms. They're coming out going, man, finally, we get a chance to hit somebody and go play. Good for them. And they played well.
I hope Eric McClain's done some kinesthetic awareness because he's next on this show. Monday, 8 o'clock. You know what happens. We bring the big fella front and center. Busy Saturday for Mac. We got plenty to talk about. Yeah, the final two snaps at the Dome. Trevor Lawrence, final home game, ? All that and more coming up. Eric McClain next on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham.